the hell? Nobody cares.
Yeah. Nobody cares but me.
Well, that's you, Marlo. You'll never learn. You're a born loser.
Yeah, I even lost my cat.
Liminalist. This is Between the Podcast. Jason Horsley, now speaking, listening, you are.
How do you want to do this? What are we doing?
We're going to explore the mystery of Garbanzo, which is only deepened now that he's not here, for me at least. I mean, he's not physically here. So we could start anywhere you want. I mean, I could start with my history of Garbanzo briefly, or you could start when you first connected to him, whichever you prefer.
Okay, the enigma of Garbanzo Horsley. After that book by Steiner, The Enigma of Caspar Hauser.
Yeah, I'm not sure if he's a Horsley or not, but.
We could start with my first encounter with him, and then we could go back to.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
So the first encounter was in February 2014.
And this was because I asked you...
And that was because we'd been with the group Soul Team talking about various things, and you had said that you were worried that Garbanzo might be dying. He had very bad asthma. And you and Michelle had been up with him, I think. And you were worried that he wasn't going to necessarily survive long. And I said, because I didn't really know them, would you like me to send some absent healing to him?
Mm.
And you said,
yes,
okay.
Please, yeah.
So I'll read out the email, so I'm not making it up, so this is exactly how it happened.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I thought I was going to send some energy and go to bed, but your cat had other ideas. We've had quite a conversation, so make of it what you will. I know nothing, as Manuel would say in Fawlty Towers. I will just share what happened. I went to sit down, and as soon as I turned my mind to him, I got the same smile I had before. And I can't remember what that smile was. He felt a very smiley being and also quite amused that he was causing such worry and concern over this old coat, his physical form. Those were his words. The feeling message he conveyed to you was, after all the things I've taught you and all the things we've been through together, you're not going to be upset over this old coat, are you, silly boy? He felt like a wise teacher or kindly grandfather, wanting to remind his student or child not to mistake him for his body. He felt very content inside, like an innocent, wise old man who had had a very rich and full life, at peace with himself. And he feels if he lives, he lives. If he dies, no problem. His being is not suffering. When I thought I was about to begin some healing, he seemed to respond with amusement as though to humour me. He would go along with it if I must do such a thing. I actually started to feel silly myself. Oh, this old coat, it's got a few worn bits and patches here and there. No problem, don't make a fuss, was the feeling. There was also something about your socks. I started to send the healing anyway, and he said, Jason needs it more than I do. He has grief stored in his lungs. Is his asthma connected to your grief, I wonder? So I said I couldn't do that. I hadn't permission, and continued. So don't worry about him. He knows he has had a full life with a lot of warmth and love from you. He seems a very cool character with a lot of wisdom. He has shared with you too. He really does want you not to be deceived by appearances, i.e. this old coat. He has had a good life despite what it may seem to you. The end. I make no comment.
There was a comment at the end as well that you did make about the strangest conversation you ever had.
Oh, and then I have never had a conversation like that! Exclamation mark. If you'd like me to send you some healing too, I'd be happy to. And you've responded with, I think, G says purr. Or that was before. And so then that went on to, on the 1st of March, the next one, which is when you'd said you would like some healing. Okay, so my report. This is my side, which, as I say, the mind coats with familiar images, but hopefully gets the essence. I wrote it down afterwards, but already had forgotten certain things. 10:30, sat down and made connection. Instantly, the familiar flash of light, seeing Jay as a light being. But, just like the sun is always bright and shining above the clouds, I then found myself descending, like a plane going through the cloud cover, patches of quite gloopy energy going down through many levels. I thought of Dave saying about the rapt flies in Harry Potter's film Spider as packets of egoic, icky packets or structures. Then I went deeper still, deeper down, through until there was no light, just utter darkness. And I then found myself carrying a torch flame in my hand to light the way. It felt like I was moving through levels of mind and structures or conglomerated ideas. Then the idea or image of a very young boy appeared in front of me. He was frightened with blonde hair. He also looked like Christopher Robin, and the thought arose that I remembered Jay saying he read Christopher Robin books as a child. Seeing the boy's fear, I heard my own voice coming from high up to the right of me, very far up. Don't worry, look, it's only like a book. I then heard Jason's real adult voice very clearly, as though in the same room but coming from the same high up, far up place, with resistance. I don't want to look. And something else I can't recall. My voice said, still coming from the same high up place, I'm here, don't worry, I can do it for you. The scene shifted slightly, but still in the same place. It was still dark, but became the tree Pooh lives in. The blonde boy and Pooh's friends sat on the ground, and I moved my hand in the scene in a wide circular motion, creating a kind of vortex of energy like a chakra on the ground. I did this for a time and then stopped. A calm pool had been created. I said to the boy, "Look, it's safe to look. There's nothing to fear." He hesitantly looked. I thought of Simba in The Lion King and saw the deep indigo sky with the stars reflected in it. As he saw this, a spark or flow of wonderment and release filled him, and I felt he had realized a deep connection or reintegration with himself or soul had occurred or been rewired. I sat there, and in the physical real room, and the physical tears came through my physical eyes on his behalf. Sadness, sorrow, old energy, grief passed through this body. It was then time to start the healing, so I did it as though Jay was on the physical couch rather than just through my mind. When I was holding his head, my middle finger became aware of a point of dark, dense energy on the back of his neck at the top of the spine, which did not seem positive. I recalled the symbol of Horus tattoo and wondered if it was that. I must check out where that tattoo was. It felt as though there was a lot of old cords, links, energies which were not helpful. It felt like I was doing a sort of exorcism because the love came pouring through and the old symbols, a lot of occult symbols, were dissolving in the light of love in the solar plexus center. I felt it was important to check with Jay to release and relinquish any old vows or links to individuals, places, etc. from the past, which may have not have been done. The energy did a lot of clearing from the root sexual center, and I felt the energy of brother there, and sexual anger, whatever that means. Felt brother had the feeling that Jay was perceived as a plaything or object for his whims as a child. I then felt a presence enter the room by my left side and jump onto the couch. It seemed to be a black cat, so I said mentally, "Oh, hello, Garbanzo, what are you doing here?" He was being a cat and sat receiving the healing energy on the bed. I then completed the bed part and sat on the chair to finish. Garbanzo jumped off the massage bed and onto my lap. I could feel his warmth, which surprised me. He then started purring loudly, really loudly, and the idea came into my mind that there was a connection between purring and brain waves. I must look it up. As I thought that, he communicated, "And now you know why I had to come to Jason as a cat." We sat a moment longer. Then I said, "I have to go now. Go home, Garbanzo," and he jumped off my lap. It was 11:30, so the session was 1 hour. I've got your response. Do you want that or not?
No. No? I'm just wondering, because those the emails that I found and I sent you isn't the whole story, well, needless to say, but I mean, it's not even the whole of our explorations together. So I'm wondering, what was the timing of the retreat? Where with the Garbanzo cat dance?
Well, that comes a bit later.
That's a bit later. Okay, so, but also wondering, it seemed that quite early on you had expressed to me that Garbanzo's concern was that I be sorted before he left, and that's not in the emails.
Right, yes, so that was the beginning, just to set the scene for his first introduction. And then what happened was, the main ones before the other part, was he appeared to me, he came into my room. It was a feeling of like he was pacing around, and I tuned into him, and there was a lot of negative energy, and I couldn't actually connect with him. So I contacted you, and there just seemed to be a lot of stress around him, and he seemed to be passing twice. He came around, then he was like pacing up and down, but he didn't trust me. I'll just write that one. It's important, that bit, because it was this builds up to when he was preparing for showing himself at the retreat. Then there's another time when he'd been wheezing, and you'd been singing to him when he wheezes, and it seemed to help. This was again in March. And I just put this one down. As I said last week, the mind can distort impressions, as you know, so only take what's feel truthful, the essence, if it feels appropriate. I sat down and meditated, but didn't feel the same connection to Garbanzo as I had last week. He didn't seem to be there to the same extent. As I felt into it, I felt a constriction and tightness across my chest. I had the impression he was coming and going and passing between different levels. Maybe sleep, because it was night time, or gentle dying process, physical and other, loosening his connection to the physical plane. I was then more aware of this other plane. There were people working like in a veterinary hospital or something. Lots of animals, pets, dogs and cats. People caring for them, holding them like babies, feeding them milk, stroking them tenderly and loving them. It was as if my presence was noticed, because I received, "Thank you, you've done your job, stroke, role, played your part, and it is now time to hand over the job to us." Like when you take a patient into hospital and the various nurses do things before seeing the consultant. I felt myself say, "Well, is there a message I can tell Jason?" The reply was instant, "Yes, there is. He, Garbanzo, is in very safe hands." Then there was an emphasis on the "very" and repeated, "very safe hands." This place, this, was it Astral Vet's place or whatever, seemed full of safe, loving helpers. Animal lovers who are helping people's pets through the transition when they pass. The feeling was that Garbanzo is becoming familiar with this place, and when the time comes, he will be at peace. Then there's the bit where, after that first bit, and I say about the boy, going back to the healing with the boy, the Christopher Robin bit and looking into the stars, you said, did I know about the book with your brother, Paper Tiger, which I hadn't known about.
Yeah.
And you'd said that reading that had given you chills, not in a bad way, sort of tingling skin. And you sent me the link for Paper Tiger.
Reading what had given me chills?
Reading the bit about Christopher Robin and the boy with the blonde hair and the the brother and the...
Right, right.
Bathing.
The sexual anger.
Yes, which I wasn't aware of at that time.
Right, right.
And I'd said, looked at the Paper Tiger, and I've said, I've just read the Paper Tiger, and this bit leapt out. When the stars threw down their spears and watered heaven with their tears, did he smile his work to see? Did he who made the lamb make thee? As the part when you, stroke the boy, looked into the pool. A beautiful confirmation is how I see it, not chilling. Mm. You have shown that you were really ready to let go of the nightmare at long last.
There's a smile as well, like your first impression of Gobenzo was the smile.
And then, where's any? It's this bit when you had the, you'd written to me and said, G's wheezing is, this was June now, G's wheezing is worse than usual recently, so if you could look into his condition, I'd be grateful.
Hmm.
And then we got this bit, I tried to link into with Garbanzo, and couldn't make a connection because of this wall of very surly, unwelcoming energy. I emailed you to say, did it make sense? And you said, absolutely. Garbanzo had been struck in the crossfire of a very ugly, surly row with the builder man working on the house, and it ended up really badly. And you sent me the link to this, to the argument you'd had with the man called Joe.
Joe, yeah.
And because I tried again. This morning I felt, this was Tuesday the 17th of June, this morning I felt Garbanzo. I can remember that clearly, it was in my bedroom. And I was putting some stuff in a drawer. And then I saw that the piece of paper I wrote his initial healing on was in front of my face on a pile of papers. So I went to tune in. He is still not talking, but the energy was as though he was pacing around at a safe distance, keeping an eye on me to see if I was to be trusted. Kind of like, I know you are there, I want to communicate something with you, please don't go off and forget, but understand that my trust has been broken. I want to trust you, but I can't right now, but please be patient, kind of feeling. Energy of shattered trust and shock. I'm not interpreting anything, just sharing what happened. It may or may not be of use to you. Perhaps you can tell G that I'm not going to hurt him, but I feel he doesn't trust humans much at the moment, full stop. And that's when you wrote back, thanks for the report, very interesting. G may be reflecting some of my feelings around this. And this was the final nail, cowboy wars at the House of Doom. And you put, I slept last night with G under the covers and my arm around him. Towards morning, also dreamt of being with him inside a train station. And you went on about that. He hasn't wheezed yet this morning. So he was like pacing around for that bit after the surly. So that area, that time when you were having the Joe incidents.
Mm-hmm.
That's when he was wanting to say something but wasn't.
So there was an incident here that isn't, well, I don't know, you didn't find it in email and I didn't send it to you, but I'm pretty sure it was, I know it was in March, so it would have been the same year, when I woke up in the middle of the night. I was awoken by two things. One was Garbanzo was hissing very loudly at the door, and But I woke up screaming at the top of my lungs, so I thought, I mean, I thought so, although Michelle didn't hear me screaming, so it's a bit mysterious. But anyway, I woke up in absolute terror, and I said to Michelle, my God, that was absolutely terrifying. And it was as though Garbanzo's hissing was intersected with the nightmare I was having, which I couldn't remember. All I knew was that it was just the most horrific scenario was unfolding in some way, or going to unfold, or had unfolded, like I was about to be tortured to death, was how I interpreted it. But anyway, and then I got up, and the front door was open, and Garbanzo was there with all his hair on end.
I remember that now. So you've got, this was March 27th. Did you manage to hear all of my update, at least the part about G and my screaming?
Yeah. Yeah.
My wife thought it may have had to do with some ancestral entity intrusion, with G as the protecting guardian at the gate. That right. sounded feasible to me. She then suggested you might be able to ask G about it, but only if you feel if it would be appropriate. The nightmare I was having had to do with two kings fighting for power, at least as far as I can recall, which is hardly at all. That was your...
Yeah, yeah.
But that ties back into the first recording, with Patrick Debman.
Yeah, because he...
Before he spoke about Garbanzo, he said, when he tuned into the four of us who would do our Skypes, that he saw these big protector cats and that Garbanzo was the physical manifestation of these other level... deities, if you like. So I'll just finish the email bits and then we can discuss.
Okay.
Yes, I was talking about your house and entities and things, which then we started talking about Syrians, not the Syrians who are refugees, the other Syrians. And we've got, he sure ain't no ordinary pussycat, just look at those eyes. That was that photograph you took of him. Syrian lion-headed one in sheep's clothing, if ever I saw one. And because you sent a picture which said, after talk of giving up worldly ambitions, today G sat in my director's chair.
Hmm.
And you called him Alfonso Garbanzo.
For being the one. I gave credit to the director, to Garbanzo, for the directing being the one.
Oh, this is the bit you'd put. September the 10th. Last night I woke again with a sore throat. This is you. I got up to gargle salt water. While I was in the kitchen, I heard a sound and turned round to see Garbanzo walking into the kitchen. He sat on the floor and I looked over at his food bowl to see if he had food. He did. I went back to gargling and when I turned round, he was nowhere in sight. I went back to bed and was amazed to find he was on the bed. It's unheard of him to go back to the same spot so quickly, so I knew beyond any doubt that he had been there the whole time. M was awake and confirmed that he had not moved from the bed. Then there was the Cat Stevens song. I woke up, that was after another healing. That was the song I sent about that cat, Oh Very Young. It seemed to be from Garbanzo.
Mm-hmm.
Then it jumped, well, we'll go back to that, but just the sequence was after the initial healing and then before the summer retreat in Finland, I was swimming in New Haven swimming pool and I was becoming more accustomed to this other presence, which would be coming from the top right hand area of my field, and it'd be like this blue black flashing kind of, I can't really describe it because it's not on this dimension, but it was, I was knowing that this Garbanzo energy was preparing to communicate something after. It was just making its presence felt somehow. And then we had the retreat. Do you want to jump to that yet or leave that?
We can go there. I'm still curious, just being a stickler for chronology and everything. Like when there's, because there's a couple of very principal ideas which I think you must have communicated to me verbally and hence we don't have a record. One was the one I mentioned already, like that Garbanzo was waiting for me to be sorted in some way before he left, and the other was just this general idea that Garbanzo was not a cat, that Garbanzo was some other kind of right or something. Did you put the Syrian label on him, or was that just because of we had that Syrian cat meme already with the other members of the group?
Well, the we had the let's not even call it Syrian, Egyptian.
Hmm.
We had the Egyptian thing, and then I've got February the 20th. So this is a year later, 2015, before I went to the other retreat. I'm just zipping up my bags and shutting everything down for the week, but I thought I'd report on a strange thing before I go. This morning I was aware of two huge black cats in my field. This afternoon I was aware of them much more strongly, big black panther-like cats with yellow eyes, one on either side, about 16 feet high. Then I remembered Patrick Dedman saying about the F4 being protected by these cats and Garbanzo being a now time physical representation of them. I hadn't felt or seen them before. Anyway, they don't seem to have a life to them exactly. They are more like protection guardians placed there, kind of like sort of guardians placed at the entrance to tombs or pyramids to ward off evil. I want to be free of any Egyptian pacts or whatever which are still affecting me, so I'm going to the retreat with that intention. The rest of me is actually whatever. something about Sekhmet and Horus.
Mm. So, but that had been going on for a while, because I think when we first started talking to a couple of other members from the Dave Oshana team on Skype, the Fab Four thing, right at the beginning, there was, I don't want to mention names just because you know why, but the younger girl, she had that vision of the cat energy, and
yes,
that was connecting to Egyptian
Sekhmet
and all that. So right, even before or around the same time that you were checking in with Garbanzo, he'd been diagnosed and all that, around that same period there was this theme about Egyptian / Syrian cat energy power, etc.
Yes. That person had before she knew about cats, she'd seen this big cat and felt this blue black energy as well.
It was blue, wasn't it?
Blue black, blue. Well, it's kind of blue black. It's blue, but it's kind of, I see it as blue black as well. But then the black, after I returned, I'll just finish that bit, then we can go back. The two black cats I told you about before I left, who are on either side of me, have revealed more clues, and now I know the Garbanzo dance was just a starter, the beginning of a trail which has yet to be fully unravelled. Not that there's been any more Garbanzo dancing, far from it. If you can feel the energy from this email, you will see it is sombre, flat, dark light, rather than joy. I was considering reading your Homo Sapiens book, but thought you have probably moved a long way since writing it and might not be something which is relevant anymore. I cannot talk about the retreat for obvious reasons, but only my bit because it relates to cats. And as you know, I'm not interested in cats nor Egypt except as it is revealed to me, or more specifically, being thrust on me. I was unaware of the cult of Bast. There's something about Crete too. The two black cats were guardians, and now I know were guardians of the secret feminine mysteries hidden in my soul, now ready to be updated or reclaimed. Garbanzo, as Patrick Dedman had stated, being a now-time representation guardian in this time frame. It was you who said they represented feminine aspects to you. I had no idea. I'd never even thought about them. There's a whole package in the wings. I thought if Garbanzo and you were up for it, we could do another meditation and see what happens. Anyway, then we on the Liminal Language Lab, which was the 4th of March.
2015 now.
Yes, 15. Yeah. So this was this period. So that was 3rd of March, and now this is the 4th of March. So this cat energy came back with a vengeance. This morning, I was still feeling slightly uneasy. And then, before I got dressed, I was aware of the black cat coming into my awareness again, so sat down to tune in. As I sat down, the 16-foot black cat went, but small, ordinary-sized cats seemed to gather, a black one by 1 foot, a white one by the other. I thought of the tarot card from an online spread I sometimes do, but can't recall what it's called. It's that one with the two, black and white. Then it was as though each direction had cats swarming in, through the window, the door, sitting on the back of my chair, gathering round my legs. The room was filled with cats. I don't even like cats, I thought. What does this mean? Understand the feline race, was what came to my mind. I seemed to become a queen, but a cat too. Then a sort of winding motion, winch movement, was shown to me, winching up this pole shape. And I was kind of stretched up, becoming a taller body, except I was watching it in my mind's eye. Blah, blah. Anyway, I thought, I don't know anything about the feline race, and I looked it up. So I've got this whole thing about the feline races. The felines are one or two primary races in our universe. They arrived here having successfully completed their universal game and completing their universe. A group of 45 felines volunteered to come to this universe to set and help oversee the game, same game here. They are bipedal race that stand 12 to 16 feet tall. It was interesting they have this 16-foot thing.
Mm-hmm.
Their skin is covered by a sort of soft fuzz, blah, blah, blah. Their eye colour ranges from blue to gold and can change from blue to gold as they mature, blah, blah. The overall feline temperament is warm, sanguine and intellectual. As they mature, they take on more of a sombre, introspective and gentle nature. The elders are revered for the wisdom, compassion and insight. As a race, they are extremely close and have a great sense of fair play. The females are revered and honoured in equal status with the males, and true to the feline way, they are all very curious and inquisitive. When the felines arrived, they were in etheric form and therefore went through the stage of evolving a physical body in which to reside on the planet. After many millions of years, they evolved the lion and other felines and began incarnating into those forms. Do you really want to hear more about the felines?
No, that's good. That's good. I like the combination of warm and intellectual because that's sort of unusual.
As part of the plan, a portion of the original feline stayed in etheric form to provide guidance to those incarnating. They would be the equivalent of your modern-day Christos beings. Remember, this was a 3D planet, and once the etheric felines incarnated, they would fall under the veil of amnesia that is part of the workings of a 3D planet of free will. As time passed, and through countless incarnation cycles, the felines evolved in a line of felines that walked upright and retained the consciousness of their etheric counterparts thanks to the periodic incarnations of some of the etheric felines and DNA from a bipedal mammal similar to the ape that was evolving on the planet as well. With the DNA from the ape-like mammal, the felines were able to take on a more human-like body while retaining most of the facial features and other characteristics of the feline. It was from this crossing, when it reached a certain stage, that genetic line known as the Royal Line of Avion, or House of Avion, came into being. The etheric felines would continue to take turns incarnating to provide not only DNA upgrading, but teaching and training in higher dimensional principles, lest their planet-bound brothers and sisters get stuck in the non-sentient animal incarnation cycle. As you can see, the felines evolved on Avion in much the same manner as humans evolved here on Earth. The only difference is that the humans did get stuck in the animal cycle. More on that on the Universal History page. It is the conscious felines grew large enough in number to take on the responsibilities of planetary guardians of their home world. They continued to evolve and eventually develop the technology for space travel, and then warp technology.
All right, you lost me at this point.
Their etheric brothers and sisters continue to act as their guides. Many of them became geneticists, a feline specialist.
Yeah, currently being auctioned at DreamWorks.
Mind you, that horrible film, Enter the Feline, what's that hideous film with all those blue people?
Avatar, yeah.
And began helping to develop life forms of various kinds of planets and started.
Okay. Pulling back now to where were
some
we?
Some among them became great space explorers and scientists of various kinds. It was during this stage in their development that the felines would turn their attention to that bipedal mammal they owed so much to and began a program of genetic crossing and upgrading that would give them a soul and, in the process, create a new species that would become known as the humans. Sure. I've heard before that humans were developed from felines before. We're not from apes, we're from cats. The felines remain the loving and supportive guardians of their genetic offspring, the humans. They have continued in this role through time and all dimensions. Blah, blah.
Yeah.
The link, okay, Garbanzo.
Garbanzo, is that male, female?
To see what you get.
Oh, Garbanzo, so it's a member of the group, yeah?
Could be.
Yeah, sounds good.
And it's not a trick question, I'll explain it later.
Yeah, Garbanzo, let's have a look. Garbanzo's symbolised as a jester, juggling balls and dancing. A character and a personality that has many twists and many, many facets. Incredible power as well. But I also feel a little bit of negativity with this. It can go high, it can go low. It's like a fire, it's sparky. But But the personality is very, very complex with this person.
What's a person?
Well, whatever it is, it's a complex energy. Mm. Extremely so. But I could see it to be so sparky, the juggler, the bringer of energy, entertainment, heightening of emotions. Whatever this energy is, it comes from a very, very strong source. You know, I've never worked with these things, but I've just shown incredibly faceted, knowledgeable energy and consciousness. How interesting.
Well, it's actually a cat.
It's a symbol of the cat.
And it belongs to another member of the group who is called Jason. So I'd be interested to see what that...
This cat is not just a cat, it's a protector as well. It's a physical symbol of the deities that are protecting you on other levels. But it comes into the circle as a protector.
I mean, the cat belongs to one of the members in Canada, but it can astrally communicate with me.
Well, cats can leave the body quite easily.
Yeah, so, different levels. And then there was quite a connection. I just felt its energy like a Syrian.
Yeah. When I saw the cats, I know it's big cats. This is a little cat, but it's still the symbol of the cat family, you see.
Yes.
The protector. So whatever this deity is, I know it's a protective force, not a disruptive force. But what did I say to you earlier? It can be spiky. Cats can be, don't forget. They can be calm, won't they? Next week, chasing mice, you know. Isn't it interesting how cats, you know, they take pleasure in torturing as well. I've seen my cats torturing mice and birds. They play with them for a long time. So it's, as I say, a very sparky force that can be very protective or very destructive. But in your case, it's a protector. So anything that comes along, it'll grab it, it'll have it. So that's, as I say, another very strong force in your favour.
Nothing to, she spied a queen, the wedding party's gone all day. See, go, the wedding party's long, 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 so she keeps time every morning.
Baby, and from bad to worse, the end is ended. She packs her bags. I'm off with Bobby. Crave all the wash of the I'm
Okay, so where are we in the Earth narrative then?
Well, I'm just seeing what else we've got. Right, we've got, those are my notes, apart from one other lot here, which was the retreat.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, this was before the retreat. I don't know how far, but it was. It seemed to be how it felt was, and of course, there's the mind can make things up. But it felt that after that, what he was telling me to wait, after that first time, after the Joe incident, there was something to be reported, but it wasn't time.
Hmm.
And then we had the retreat, and you were having a process, and what happened was, it was, I felt this kind of, in the earlier that day, that's right, you had said you'd felt Garbanzo on the retreat.
All right. So that may have been the night before then, because I was trying to remember when. I mean, as I remember, feeling Garbanzo on the retreat was in the during the night in the Shala, and I don't know what else was going on. I just remember I went outside of the Shala and I was compelled to start crawling around on hands and knees and pretending to be Garbanzo or channeling Garbanzo. That's all I remember, just that his presence was really strong. But I don't know what triggered it, or I don't know what the context was, because I've lost, obviously, the order of events. But it was if you're right about that, then it would have been the night before the Garbanzo dance. Because I would have told you about it during the day. Was that the same? Because this was the same retreat that I took my Eye of Horus T-shirt, which, by the way, Garbanzo. I used as a shroud for Garbanzo. And was that the same retreat that you saw the Eye of... Yeah, it was the same morning I was wearing the T-shirt.
I've only ever seen you on two retreats.
Right. And so the same morning that I put that T-shirt on, you saw the cloud?
That was the day after. After the Garbanzo dance. That's what got every... Because you felt the presence of Garbanzo in the retreat space.
Yeah.
Then in that afternoon, you were going through a process.
On the pier, where I was... I ended up going, I'm a man, I'm a man. That time, was it? I think it was. Yeah.
I think that was a different time. You weren't doing that then.
Wasn't I? You were there though at that time.
Yes, that wasn't happening there. Then that wasn't that one. No. We can't discuss what went on there.
Well, can you discuss what happened with me? Nobody's got a copyright on that.
You were having some processing.
Yeah.
I felt something like, as often happened then, transfer energetically, like leap across, like a, you know, like sometimes what would happen is somebody else would be clearing somebody else's energy.
Mm. You know how that happened. Yeah, yeah.
But it kind of, I didn't notice it to say anything. I was just aware of it. And then we had to go into the evening session, and I felt this asthma started, and my lungs were wheezing painfully, and my heart felt sore.
Hmm.
I was beginning, I've written this in my notes, I was beginning to feel a bit scared, unable to breathe, when suddenly, bang, Garbanzo energy came into me. The same powerful, dark blue light I have seen in the swimming pool experience and experiencing in the top far right section of my spatial awareness at the same spatial location I had heard Jason speak when I did the healing and met the inner little boy. And then on my right, my right leg started pounding the floor, and I brought through the calling. Now what happened, my experience was like the energy was coming through me, so I was clearing out blocks and stuff like a kundalini awakening, but also there was this South American feeling. Do you remember I've said? It was like I was overtaken by this presence, but also I was clearing, energetically clearing stuff, I think, for the whole group. But it was also for you. Of remembrance, it just definitely felt like it was a remember. That's what the feeling was. Remember your origins, remember the language of light, remember your connection to the transmission, remember I am. And it was like the energy was activating codes of information, was clearing a whole pile of stuff from your field.
From my field or your field?
Yeah. Well, the field. It had come from you. This energy leapt from you like a battery into me, and I was clearing it. But it was also a collective thing as well, because there was other people participating in it. So I think we were all clearing from the collective field as well. And then, because this was, I was going quite long, everybody left and I was still in that place. You all went to bed, everybody. And then the next day, it was a clear blue sky, and then the Horus eye cloud appeared in the other way, blue sky. That was before breakfast. And then I walked down to the seafront, beachfront, whatever it was called, and you were wearing the same T-shirt with the Horus eye on.
Yeah, I hadn't worn it for years. I retired that T-shirt.
Yes. So basically, it was then. So back to Garbanzo. I think the reason I was picking up on it is because, as I said before, my astrologically, my sun in Scorpio is sitting on your south node, conjunct your south node. And a couple of other conjunctions. So I think it was like a Egyptian.
Still rattling your microphone, by the way.
Sorry, this thing keeps falling. How come that? So I think it was like a karmic whatever.
Right, and then your last email to me after Garbanzo died, jumping all the way to the present, was to do with how some pact that I got embroiled in over the millennia had dissolved. And I mean, this has been going on for a few months because there was other stuff.
Oh, the exorcism, you mean?
I don't remember you calling it. Oh, I can't remember if you called it an exorcism, but it was a few months ago that there was that thing. I don't remember the specifics because it was your vision, so it a lot of it doesn't stick, but it had to do with a contemptuous part of an aspect of my own consciousness as I'm aware of it that is contemptuous and superior and aristocratic, and I see that as an ancestral strand going back to Masonic elitism or whatever it is in Egypt, even ancient Egypt. But anyway, that thing,
that entity thing,
yeah. And so that, I mean, it seemed as though that had cleared a few months ago, but then in your last email, it seemed with Garbanzo's passing, that may have been...
Well, I felt that after that had happened, I wondered how long Garbanzo would stay.
Right, which brings me back to that question of when and where you got that first sense that Garbanzo was waiting for me to sort something out before he left.
I think it was around about that time that I was that somehow there was some there was the original feeling from the original healing when he was like your teacher, but also the fact that he'd come as a cat so that you could love him and love him and be with him in a way that it wouldn't have been possible in another form. But I also got the feeling with all this other Egyptian stuff that maybe that soul fragment or part or whatever could have been in partly in a cat, because it was, you had both been having to clear karma about power. And so you definitely can't do any damage if you're a cat.
Right. Well, because that brings me to my original experience of Garbanzo. I mean, when we first found Garbanzo in the shoebox in Oaxaca, Liz, my partner at the time, found him, brought him back. He was so small that he didn't know how to drink milk, like he was biting the spoon. He was looking for a breast. In the months that we first were with Garbanzo, after naming him and as he grew up to adult, we joked about him because he seemed to emanate such dark energy. He didn't like to be petted. That we would joke that he resented being a cat. And so we joked that he was an old seer, in Castaneda's term, that these sorcerers who took the wrong path and, you know, tried to attain immortality through separating from the source, those guys. So that became a running joke about Garbanzo, that he was that, like he was doing his, he was absolving, yeah, for past hubris.
I think part of him, that fits.
If
it fits the general story.
It fits the general narrative, yeah.
Definitely.
Go ahead.
I was listening to a recording the other day from a spiritual teacher, and somebody had questioned them, saying, do souls incarnate as animals, like people often say? And they were saying, well, usually not, because you know, it's evolution and it's don't go backwards, except there's one exception. If somebody had done something very evil or
abusive,
then they could incarnate as an animal in order to learn
some humility.
Some humility.
Okay, and so then we have, to confuse matters more, or at least to deepen the story, the sense that I have had, and that you've confirmed in some sense, that Garbanzo was actually my own soul.
I mean, it's a weird thing about boundaries, isn't it? I mean, where does one soul finish and another one begin? I don't know. But I mean, because I think we're so multidimensional, and I think the fact that when, like with the soul group, with us and the other participants, we get into some quite muddy waters, because there is this kind of soul group energetic exchange on other levels, which can create problems, because it's like the energetic boundaries can get kind of confused.
Well, there is that, of course, and the whole notion of a soul doesn't fit into an ego mental structure anyway, so granted that, but it
could be that you and he were like, you know, I think you definitely were together, yeah, but we don't know quite whether he was your soul, or whether, you know, a fragmented part of your soul, or whether he was a different entity. I haven't read Castaneda, but that book you recommended, the Affinity one.
Affinity? Initiation?
No, Affinity. Carlos Castaneda.
Oh, Active Side of Infinity. Oh, that was because you wanted to tell your own story. That was why, yeah.
But at the front page of that, they talks about when the shaman or the sorcerer or whatever recognizes the other person from that, like the double soul bit. So it could be like that. Your kind of double yoked soul bit, which we've sort of seen before.
Did I tell you about Liz and the Syrian prophecy in relation to Garbanzo?
No.
I didn't. Well, when I first met Liz, she had a boyfriend at the time. I met her online, and he went to a psychic, and she told him that he shouldn't interfere with what was going on, because Liz and I were destined to be together because we were going to have a child who would be a great world leader of some kind.
I remember you said something. Yeah, you said something.
I did
about
say that. And then later,
Yeah, sorry, go on.
Yeah, and so I had, both of us had a series of dream visions about this child. I remember it was, one of mine at least, it was kind of a dark, well, she was part Taiwanese, so, but it was, you know, it was a mixed race child in the dream. And, yeah, so we both had various dream visions about this child, and we both fully expected to have a child together. And then a couple of years after, so this had been before she found Garbanzo, she had this communication, she received this communication from wherever, the beyond, and it told her that we were of a Syrian line and that our child would be a great Syrian leader of some kind, and he would be the world destroyer. And I was very pleased about that, because it was back in my Matrix Warrior days, and so world destruction was, you know, the only means of liberation, etc., etc. So it made perfect sense to me, and even the Syrian stuff, I was kind of down with that because of the various stuff that I had read. But anyway, I mention it now because we never did have a child, but Garbanzo essentially was that child, I think.
But I think this Syrian theme is consistent with with the energy, and with Egypt, and this sort of the symbology, or that energy, its particular energy. There were other things. Yes, I mean the other bit was with the black cats, and then the vision of Crete and me needing to go to Greece, which happened before I actually went. So that was as a result of the cats and the Garbanzo connection. And I went in this year, so a year later. So I think basically this whole thing with the cats and with Garbanzo, it's almost like the energy which we reconnected to with the group, we had been in contact with in Egypt. When I say we, I mean whoever those people were then, but there's a familiarity, and so that was going to bring up old storylines and memories, encodements of working with that energy, which had been way back then, and Garbanzo and you were kind of still linked into that, so that when it's almost like he was having to be with you until you were strong enough to stand on your own two feet, kind of thing, without him, you know, which is, but also that exorcism the other day, that was almost like a curse, keeping, it's like some pact. But that particular one, it was that came from your family line. That wasn't so much you.
Right.
It was like it had been summoned. It had been summoned by practices, rituals.
Well, when Garbanzo died, I was working on a piece about Aleister Crowley, which just came about in the way these things do. It was organic. It was beyond my will, you know. It just didn't feel like I had much choice about it, finding out things about Crowley. And the main thing was his involvement in child sex, torture, murder, all of that really, really dark stuff. But also, it's definitely part of history that he sacrificed a cat for a ritual when he was in Italy. And when Garbanzo was dying in those last few hours and I was with him, I kept thinking about Crowley, and it was weird because it was just like, well, it's just because you're working on the Crowley piece. But no, it wasn't. There was more to it. And I had the sense, or the thought anyway, that my starting work on the Crowley piece had been a signal to Garbanzo that I was ready to let go.
Right, yes. I mean, there must be some link there because you were so drawn to that material when you were younger.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, for some reason.
Yeah, and he was into Sirius. His own secret society was Argento Astrum, which was Sirius. He considered Sirius to be the god planet star or whatever. So a lot of that comes through Crowley.
I've always steered well away from reading any of his. I've never felt drawn, but I didn't, so I don't know anything about.
Yeah, and the reason I have an Eye of Horus tattooed on the back of my neck is because of Crowley, because of the Book of the Law. You know, even though I never trusted Crowley as a man, not for a moment, I nonetheless took on his belief system kind of blindly, really. I really took it on at a deep level to the point that I actually had a tattoo on my body.
Well, those people who were involved at that time, when they, you know, they have to come back doing something, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
So there's no reason to, you know, they have to be, everybody's in an upward spiral towards God, so.
Right.
You know, everybody's evolving, but so it could be that you were involved then anyway.
Yeah, well, I've certainly felt that for a long time, not that. Unless, yeah,
it could have been. And your whole family, you know, that's the.
Well, yeah, and I did find many, you know, when I was mapping my past in Yorkshire and my family history and connecting to these groups and things, that I kept finding connections to Crowley, like 1 or 2 degrees, even to the point that my grandfather could have met him. And I know that's a superficial thing in terms of what happened historically, but just in terms of the resonance of the energies or psychic, you know, patterns or whatever, there can be no doubt. The other thing I found out recently was, you know, because as a child, you may not know this, as a child, and it's interesting because you've said that you're not a cat lover. Well, and I think of myself as a cat lover, absolutely. But as a child, I did weird things to cats. And I don't remember the earlier stories, but they were passed down because they were stories that were told about me and what an odd child I was. I dyed one cat purple, Coco, I think its name was. I'm not sure how, it was with powder, I think. Another cat I put in the washing machine, which fortunately I didn't turn it on, but I just put it in there and closed the door. And I have a memory of a later cat called Sophie, interestingly enough, that I tied to the piano. And I remember, and I was about 8 or 9 then, and that I have another memory of tormenting these gerbils and being sexually excited by it and not understanding that. And the same with the cat, like it was a sadistic impulse to tie it to the piano. But anyway, I found out recently that my father loved cats, and I'd never known that about him. So it may well have been, that may have been part of the psychodynamic of me actually tormenting these cats as something to get back at my father in some way.
Thank you.
The second part of this conversation will be up next Wednesday, the 6th of July. This is Jason Horsley and the Liminalist Podcast Between. Thanks for listening. Just